Welcome to the 1UP Club here at 1UP.club and also, incidentally, the Trending Topics Network. My name is Brian, and on this week's episode of 1UP Heads Up, we're going to give you the heads up on some VR news and some cross-platform news that is very likely to shake the industry of the video game world. But first, before we get into any of that, let me just jump right in and bring on my guest, my 1UP.club partner, you might say. He is GameBlock.com, don't forget the hyphen, very own Ryan Hamner. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
It's been a very busy week.
Yeah.
Already.
In real life. Real life and the games industry.
Yeah, for real. And how have you been doing? I know you've got a lot going on there. You're diving a bit into Super Mario Bros. 2 for the cabinet and stuff.
You know, I kind of went back and forth on what game I wanted to do this week because I did a Nintendo game last time. I did Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. And I don't want people to get confused and think the cabinet is just a love letter to the Nintendo Entertainment System, because we're going to be doing old PC games. We're going to be doing we did a Super Nintendo game this week. We're going to be doing some Xbox 360, PlayStation 1. All that stuff is going to be covered, but I just, for whatever reason, had an itch to play Super Mario Bros. 2 this week, so I figured I would make that the show, and the response has actually been really, really positive. I didn't realize there was that many people that loved that game.
Yeah, there are actually a ton of people that like it, and you asked me about my knowledge of the game, and I just simply didn't own it.
Yeah, you're not.
It's the one I didn't own.
That's the story that you get from a lot of people. I was super excited because, I mean, like every other kid my age, I absolutely loved the original Super Mario Brothers because, of course, that's the game that came with the console when you got it. And It was just so much fun. But by the time it was time to make another game, we were just so drooling at the chance to get back and get some fresh Mario adventures. And what we got in the form of Super Mario Bros. 2 was certainly not what anyone expected, I think, because it is a weird game. It's not bad, but it's a strange game.
Yeah, it's very Japanese for the time, which you consider back then, we didn't have all the knowledge of what was going on in Japan, really, overseas. We had to basically go by what Nintendo Power Magazine told us about the Japanese culture, and really that was far and few between because they knew to cater to the American audience. And the thing with Super Mario Bros. 2 and why I didn't necessarily get into it was probably because it was so weird, and back then I was not in any way, shape, or form like an eccentric gamer or whatnot. And we actually had video rental stores in virtually every single town, and they were never like the big blockbuster stores. They were, me growing up in a little town called Elderton, Pennsylvania, where there was literally a single stoplight at that time. We had a video store where everything had the VHS, and the fact that it had just a few video games, like literally a dozen video games for rent, for the Nintendo. It was kind of a big deal if you could get them. And the one time that I got Super Mario Bros. 2, I was expecting something that was more like Super Mario Bros. 1, and that's far from it. So I was kind of put off by it and just never wanted to get it. But after playing Super Mario Bros. 3, then they hooked me back in because Super Mario Bros. 3 is really the penultimate game of the franchise, I think, outside of having the distinction of being the original one that hooked me on the series.
Yeah. Yeah, and no doubt. And if you want to go over to, and definitely go over to the site game-block.com, don't forget the hyphen, of course. And read the story. And, I mean, the development history behind this game, I'm not going to spoil anything here because I want you to check out the article, is really, really interesting to see what Nintendo originally wanted to do with the sequel to their cornerstone title that was on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and how things kind of fell apart, and they were able to think around some corners and make some adjustments and kind of recover from the tailspin of the development for that game, which got off to a really bad start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, sometimes whenever change happens, and I was just talking about this in terms of politics this week, not all change is easy to accept. And when you're going from something that's very familiar and completely changing it, a lot of times it's going to be met with a little bit of resistance or a lot of resistance. But I am glad that you're doing a Super Mario Brothers 2, because when I was doing this date in video game history, Super Mario Brothers 2 was probably the game that I got the most reaction out of.
Yeah.
Whenever I did that article. So it was really kind of neat, because that's definitely a game that will actually engage conversation, because it is so polarizing. Mm-hmm. And the people who love it, love it.
Yeah, our mutual friend Paul Clemente, he this is his favorite Mario game.
Yeah, and that does not surprise me at all. All right, well, in the meantime, because you said that you don't really want to focus on NES-centric games, my first game was actually going to be Dr. Mario, but I have actually changed my mind over the past day or two. I will actually be hooking up the PlayStation 1 and doing a little Tekken 2 action.
Nice.
A lot of people who love fighting games, if they've been around long enough, they know exactly what Tekken 2 is. They've spent plenty of time with Tekken 2, so I figured, why not go to Tekken 2? And it's literally been 2.5 years probably since I've thrown it in.
Mm.
But I figure now is the perfect time. I might as well do it, get that out of the way, embarrass myself after having forgotten all the controls.
Yeah, that's one thing I do find with these retro replays. And I discovered that when I was playing SMB2. Man, the rust that you have to shake off is just mm-hmm. not good. And when I record my videos, I'm not doing any kind of practice beforehand. What you are seeing is me after 10 years, maybe even more, without playing the game that I'm playing, and it's pretty obvious it shows. I definitely struggled this week in Super Mario 2.
I think that's the fun part of it, though.
Yeah.
Because we go back, and we've talked about it before, how the controls have changed with basic games, and how today's games require you to think in a different way, whether it's with the way they actually handle, given they're more timing-based back then, and then complicated with 16 different buttons and different combinations of buttons and X, Y, Z axes. And
mm-hmm.
Back then, it was literally two dimensions. You had up and you had down, and
yep.
the only way to use the up was to hit that A button.
Mm-hmm.
And don't hit the B button at the wrong time.
It is. It's just a lot more timing-based. And I can see, like, my daughter, who is 7 now, so she's growing up with contemporary video games. And she tried to play Super Mario 2, and she was just instantly frustrated because it's just from a different era. And her brain just can't wrap around that. That's how games used to be. They used to be brutally difficult. And honestly, Super Mario 2 isn't a game that I associate with being particularly difficult. So I can't imagine what she would, how many controllers she would throw over Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Battletoads.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were so many games back then that would do that to you. And you really, back then, the advantage we have today is we have things like GameStop. We don't like the game, trade it in. Back then, your parents went and sprung the $50, $60 on a game, which is one of the unoverlooked things about the game industry is game prices haven't really changed all that much in 30 years.
Hardly at all.
But back then, we didn't have the option of actually going out and trading the game in to get something new, to have a better experience with something else. Basically, once we got that game, it was ours for perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
And we were stuck with it.
And of course, no demos back then. You know, you couldn't download a demo of Super Mario 3 and try it out first. I mean, you had to buy the game, unless you were lucky enough to be in a town that was big enough to have, like, a store with a kiosk where they'd have a Nintendo set up, and you could kind of get a sample of the game that way. I mean, you were committed to buying it if you wanted to play the game.
Yeah, you really were. And much like video game rentals and online demos and things like that have changed the industry, we are on the cusp, Brian, of maybe the biggest year of really revolution in the video game industry, which is why I wanted to get together with you today and discuss some of the news that's broken over the past 2 days or so. We got a couple topics that we're going to discuss. Today we're going to discuss VR, because there's some really big VR news coming out, and there's also some really big cross-platform gaming news that broke over the past day or so that I really wanted to talk about, because it is. It's a revolution in the gaming industry that we are literally bearing witness to. And some people might not necessarily appreciate it because we're constantly inundated with news of this and news of that. But I definitely wanted to get a hold of you and get your thoughts. And I'm really interested in anybody's thoughts who want to add to the conversation after the fact. So if you want to do that, by all means, go to 1UP.club, and much like GameBlock.com, don't forget the hyphen. So 1UP.club, 1-UP.club, as I can't speak today. Go there. And after you go there, by all means, hit up the comment section or the contact section of the page, where you can actually send us an email and weigh in on your thoughts. Or actually send a Skype message to me if you'd like, because I believe you can record up to 3 minutes of a Skype call, or you can even email us at the1upclub@gmail.com. That is also an option for you, because we want to know what you think, because there's a lot of stuff going on here that we're going to talk about today, and we're definitely interested in hearing your opinion. Also, you can hit us up on Twitter, at ToonsBrian, at Rye Hamner. We're definitely interested in hearing what it is you have to say, because there are a lot of different directions to take a lot of the different news that is coming out. Starting with the Oculus Rift, and chronologically we decided to go with this because the Oculus Rift is the VR device that will be coming to us the soonest.
That's right around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it's literally right around the corner. And within a month or two, I want to say. I can't remember the exact date that it comes out. But within the past hour, this news story came out. So I definitely wanted to jump on this, because Oculus Rift will launch very shortly, and it will launch with 30 titles. That's a lot of titles.
Mm-hmm.
According to VGCharts.com and William D'Angelo, who works there, Oculus has revealed the VR headset, the Oculus Rift, will launch with 30 games when it releases on March 28th. Yeah, so by the end of the month, just less than 2 weeks. Titles that will release post-launch actually include Rock Band VR and Edge of Nowhere. Games for the system will be priced anywhere. We'll start the high end. $59.99, which is reasonable. The low end is $4.99 for games for that VR system.
Like mobile game price.
Yeah, that's actually a damn good deal, especially for a new device in a VR world like that. That's really kind of interesting, because that's pretty much what you play for a decent mobile game on a cell phone. Packaged with the Rift will be Lucky's Tale, Adventure Time Magic Man's head game is the cheapest game at $4.99, while Elite Dangerous and Eve Valkyrie are the games priced at $59.99. For a full list, you can go to VGCharts.com. I'll just quickly run through some of them. They have in alphabetical order, as so far as I can tell. They just get, well, no, it's not alphabetical. It just happens to be at the top of the list. They are. Some of the games that will be released on the release date. Adrift, which is actually a game that I do kind of find interesting. I've talked about it before. It's basically you wake up on an all but abandoned space station that's been wrecked, and you have to figure out what happened and find a way home.
It's a cool concept.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, that's like survival horror.
Yeah.
But where the biggest enemy would be the fact that you're trapped in space.
Yeah.
It's got to be better than the movie Gravity.
Huh. Did not like Gravity, huh?
I hated Gravity. I loved it. So ridiculously boring.
I absolutely loved it.
My wife did too, and I was like, no, I can't do this. I'm like, there's just not enough going on.
It's a very polarizing film. You know, people are either really, really into it like I am, or, not so much. Kind of like you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But just, I did, you know, I've done a little bit of research on Adrift, and, you know, just the concept behind it, reading through that reminds me so much of the first couple of hours of Dead Space 3. Now, you know, I've gone on and on about the Dead Space franchise. I absolutely love it. Didn't like 3, didn't even bother to finish 3, but the first couple of hours, which is very heavy in searching through space wreckage and stuff like that, which is kind of what the description of Adrift reminds me of, that part was great. And I would love to get something even similar to that. And the fact that it's VR, and if they can pull that off and make it good, that's just icing on the cake. I mean, this is definitely the VR title on the Oculus that has my attention the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, like, the mechanics of the game and what it's supposed to be, it just seems like a natural fit for the concept of VR itself.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, if there was a game that would really push me towards it, I think Adrift would be it.
Yeah.
You might be interested, Ryan, that a day one launch for the Oculus Rift will be Project Cars.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be priced at $49.99, so it's near the top of the list in terms of money.
Worth it.
But a VR version of Project Cars, which everybody seems to love Project Cars, what are your thoughts on that? Because I don't know if it's going to be, you're kind of going to be locked up in the cockpit or how that's going
to
work.
Yeah, that's just the thing. I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is to say, oh my God, I love playing Project Cars. It's going to look awesome in VR. But then I kind of wonder, I mean, is it really? I mean, it already works just fine the way it is. I'm a little bit apprehensive about making that a VR experience. I mean, I don't know how exactly it would even work as far as, like, looking around. I mean, you're in a race car. I mean, there's only so much looking around you can really do. But, yeah. You know, I definitely would like to give it a shot. I mean, if they do it for the PlayStation version, that would be definitely something I would look into. But, I mean, I'm not going to buy an Oculus just to check it out, especially at $600. But, it's very interesting.
I hear you there. If you do have kids, Adventure Time, Magic Man's Head Games, will actually be releasing there. I know you have a young one, and we talked about that just a little bit ago at
$4.99. Yeah.
One of the more interesting ones, I think, as well, is Air Mech Command. The Air Mech games, you're working with basically a combination of it's very Robotech, I guess you could say. So Air Mech would actually be kind of a fun game if you're in the cockpit of one of those machines and you can go from flight mode to robotic battler mode. That would be kind of interesting. They have Albino Lullaby, which I'm not sure what that is, but I'm allowed to say that because some of my best friends are albinos. Mm. Audio Arena, Not sure what that one is either. I would assume it's some sort of a music simulator game.
Maybe like a rhythm game like Guitar Hero or DJ Hero.
Yeah, or some sort of a... It'd be kind of cool if it was a party game.
Yeah.
Given the arena aspect of the title. You've got Chronos, Darknet, Dead Secret, Defense Grid 2, Enhanced VR Edition. That one would be kind of interesting, I guess, just to see how they handle it. Because I can't picture Defense Grid as anything but an oblique view game.
Yeah.
It'd just be kind of weird. Like, the mechanics of the game itself, I don't know how they're going to translate that to VR. But they're doing it.
So, some of these port titles, they're going to have to get very creative with how they incorporate the VR. It's like just echoing what you're saying. I just don't see how it would work in a game like that. But you know, maybe they'll surprise us. There's all kinds of cool stuff you can do with menus and stuff like that. But you know, for $30, I guess I would rather have something a little incorporate a little more VR for that price.
Yeah, and one of the games that has me laughing is Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, which I've already beaten.
$15 for that one.
Yeah, where's the challenge there? The obligatory sports game of VR Tennis Online, which pretty much every console that ever launches ends up with a not just a sports game, but it seems like specifically tennis.
Yeah, all the way back to Pong, man. I mean, that's the original tennis game.
It's just really amusing that it ends up doing that.
Yeah.
To where they go back to, like you said, all the way back to Pong. There's something about tennis games that these companies just like to launch their systems with.
I love Top Spin 4. I mean, I played the hell out of that on PS3.
Yeah, my son actually loves playing Wimbledon on the Genesis. Yeah.
Now they're fun games. I mean, as far as console sports games go, you know, Madden gets repetitive. Same with The Show. I like racing games. If people, you know, still some people consider that sports game, some don't. But I think I've had the most fun over the last two console generations with Top Spin 4, which is a fantastic tennis game.
Yeah. And one of the fun things about tennis that is the fact that the rules rarely ever change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's accessible. It's accessible to anybody who's ever played a game in the past 25, 30 years. You know exactly what you're getting,
yeah,
even if the graphics have changed.
Mm-hmm.
The obligatory pinball game with Pinball FX2 VR. I don't think there's been a console since they've gone online that hasn't had pinball via FX2.
Yeah.
I can't talk. But that's pretty much a mainstay. Also, you've got Shuffle Pack Cantina Deluxe VR, Smashing the Battle, Vanishing of Ethan Carter, Vectron Revenge, Blaze Rush, Windlands, and a few more that I actually missed, including Eve Valkyrie, Vlad Akuma, Eve Gunjack, Herobound, SC. So there's a lot of titles. Either way, you're looking at 30 different titles that are coming out with this Oculus Rift. That's a pretty... I mean, if you're going to have a launch of a whole new, basically, slew of VR consoles, I think Oculus basically hit a home run by having the sheer number of release titles that they had. If they're going to succeed, they're going to have to offer a lot and offer it quickly, and I think they've done that.
Yeah, and it seems like the most popular price point is $9.99 and $14.99. So, I mean, you're going to have a handful of games that are going to be in the $60 price point, but when you're talking $10 for a game, $15 for a game, there's quite a few that are at $20 a game. I mean, plenty of these games are going to suck. But if you spend $10 on a game and you get 5 hours of entertainment before you say, this is not a good game, I'm done with it, you're not as pissed off as you are if you spend $60 on a game and hate it instantly. So, I mean, by offering up that wide range of options at a cheap price point, I mean, they're really making the transition for people who are going to have to shell out $600 for the headset. They're giving them lots of options where, okay, you had to buy a spendy headset. Here's some games at a reasonable price. So it's going to make it a little bit, going to make the pain of buying the headset sting a lot less.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, you're going to have some stinkers, and I don't think anybody expects anything less.
Yeah.
But like you said, I mean, you're talking, if you got enough titles out there, they're cheap enough. The industry themselves are going to tell you which ones to go to first.
Yeah.
And I know I follow Ben Kushera of Polygon.com on Twitter, and he's been doing nothing but praising VR forever because he's kind of a VR nerd. He's loved VR for the better part of since the whatever Game Boy thing, the Virtual Boy came out. Yeah. And so you kind of look at his stuff and you take it with a grain of salt. But the thing about people like that is that if a game is really, really great, you'll be able to tell by how they treat it, how they talk about it. That's one of the things I do like about Twitter is you see their patterns of speech and you see their patterns of thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to discern what's a load of crap and what's kind of like a conversation with anybody. Whenever you talk to somebody long enough, you see how they treat different things, how they overreact in some instances and how they underreact in some instances. You kind of get a feel for how they feel about different things, and you get to gauge just how excited they are about something whenever it comes out. And whether you agree with them or not, then you can at least tell how excited they are about it. And with Ben Kushera, I've been really paying attention to him on the VR thing because I know that he's been a 25-plus year VR nerd, if you will. And he seems to be really taken aback by this, by all the different VR devices that he's coming in contact with. But I will be interested in paying attention to at least the games that he's actually going to in these situations. So keep an eye on that. We'll also keep you up to date here at 1UP.club. And heads up. Moving on, though, the other big VR news that came out this week, Sony actually announced the price point and release window for the PlayStation VR, formerly known as Project Morpheus.
Mm-hmm.
Were you looking at an October release date, which totally makes sense,
yeah,
leading into the holiday season for the PlayStation VR, at a price point of $399.
Yep.
Now, I texted you as soon as I heard about this, and your reaction was very positive.
Yeah.
$399, is that, I mean, that's what you predicted on this very show.
Yeah.
So does that make you happy?
Yeah, I mean, my ceiling on purchasing PlayStation VR was the $400 price point. And obviously this is at the absolute high of that. But, I mean, that is reasonable. I think they're going to move plenty of units at that price because, I mean, especially when anyone that's interested in VR is going to take a look at, wow, this is $400. Oh, wait, Oculus Rift is $600. This is a great deal. And, I mean, just like they did when they announced the PlayStation 4 price, Sony came in, waited for the others to play their hand, and came in and underbid them, which I'm sure they're probably going to be taking a loss on PlayStation VR, but they seem willing to do that to move units, and I think it's the right move.
Yeah, and definitely, and you talked about them moving a lot of units, and the next story was actually centered around that. Analyst Pierce Harding Rolls from IHS Screen Digest forecasts that the PlayStation VR will sell around 1.6 million units worldwide by the end of 2016.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
If they do that, according to Harding Rolls, that'll give Sony a 64% market share in the VR market right off the bat.
Yeah.
That's insane. And here's the thing. We talk about the price point, and I talked about it when it came to E3, which is one of the things that I don't like about E3 is it always seems like Microsoft goes first, and then PlayStation comes in and says, what worked? Mm-hmm. What didn't? Now we're going to announce something that goes in a little bit different in our direction. We're going to make some adjustments, and it automatically gives them an advantage to everybody.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is exactly what happened in this instance.
Yeah.
Oculus Rift, obviously launching it this month, would be, I believe, $599 for that device.
Yeah, $600.
Yeah. And then what PlayStation or Sony does is they come in and undercut that cost.
Yeah. Deja vu, you know.
Yeah, it's very smart on their part.
Definitely.
And I'm not going to begrudge them that. It's an excellent marketing strategy. It's perfect. And this is exactly how they go out and they get such a large market share of everything that they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, the $399, it's a better price than I thought it was going to be. But as I told you, I value my marriage so much that I just don't see myself getting that.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, and again, you know, I'm not saying this doesn't guarantee that I'm going to purchase PlayStation VR, because from the very beginning, it was a two-step process for me. The price has to be acceptable, which we now know it is. I mean, $399 is what I've always said is the ceiling for what I would pay, and they were able to hit that. But the second step in a purchase for me is the games. That launch lineup, it's robust. They've got 50 games they've offered. 50 games. That is 20 more than the Oculus is going to offer up. But how many of those are going to be good? And that's the deal. I mean, for me personally, a minimum 4 to 5 titles have to be quality titles. And I'm talking, when I grade a game, I usually use a traditional, like you have in school, like an F to an A scale. I need a couple of A games, and I've got to have 4 to 5 B games before I even consider plopping down $400 to buy this headset.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that, I mean, they haven't obviously listed a list yet of the games that will be available. But one of the things that the analyst says is that you have to take into account the fact that the PlayStation VR will work with the PlayStation 4. And so there are a lot more people that will be VR ready, not having to upgrade their PCs or laptops with all new equipment to make that happen, plus the cost of the VR headset. It's really just going to be kind of a plug-and-play thing for people who already own the PlayStation 4. Also mentioned was the fact that when you take into account, and this is the quote, when you take into account the total cost of ownership using a PS4 as a source device, Sony's experience ends up around half the price of its PC-based competitions.
Yeah.
That's a really, really big deal. When you consider the cost of my gaming laptop that I bought recently was on sale for $1,300.
Yeah.
If you consider a base model PS4 plus the PlayStation VR, you're still only looking at like around $700, $750.
Yeah.
So it totally makes sense. If you're going to get into that market, if you're somebody who's interested in VR, the PlayStation VR just seems like a huge idea, so if you can wait until October to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the established name Sony, that does carry a lot of weight. I mean, many of us have used their products, their gaming products, for, you know, how many years now? I mean, how has the PlayStation been around? 20 years? I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're familiar with them. I'm not a Sony fanboy or anything like that. I mean, I have massive amount of respect for how Microsoft does business. I'm actually going to be doing some PC gaming this afternoon. So I have my hands in everything. We played Nintendo all day yesterday. So it's not just Sony for me. But there is something when you're talking about such a large investment to be spent in new technology. It's nice to be familiar with the company that you're going to purchase with. And I'm just most comfortable with Sony at this point. I don't know much about Oculus. So, I mean, you combine that with the cheaper price. I mean, if I go VR, that's still a massive if. I'm not saying I'm buying this unit. I'm going to go Sony.
Yeah. And we don't have any titles for the PlayStation VR yet.
Actually, I can fix that, Brian, because IGN just released that a couple of minutes ago, it looks like.
They've
got it up on their site. So I've got this pulled up right now. This is from IGN.com. If you want to go there and check that out. But, yeah, they've got Adrift is one of the titles that's going to be featured in there. I'm just kind of scrolling down through. Gollum is a big one. I know that is the one that the critics have been touting the most, is that could be the big game for PlayStation VR. That's the one that's getting the most buzz. So people have got their hands on Gollum, and it's getting positive feedback from what critics have seen up to this point. You've got Eve Valkyrie. That's another one that a lot of people have been talking about. Dreams. That's a game that we've seen at...
Yes.
Have we seen that at two E3s now, or was it just last year?
I didn't remember it from the last time before, but I do remember it from last year.
That's a Media Molecule title, if I'm not mistaken. So you look at the track record that company has. I mean, they look what they did with Little Big Planet and Tearaway. I mean, that game could offer some really interesting things for VR. So I'm just kind of scrolling down. Paranormal Activity VR. I don't know if that's associated with the films. I have to assume so. A little bit skeptical about that one. Star Wars Battlefront VR experience.
That would be kind of fun.
Tekken 7. You spoke about Tekken a little bit earlier, Brian.
Yes.
There's some interesting stuff on here. And, I mean, there's some potential. This could pan out.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad that they did release some of the titles, because I was actually looking basically a half hour before we went on. VG Charts also announced that Sony had released a list of 230 developers working across the different regions. And just to read off some of the developers that are working on PlayStation VR games, we're just going to stick with North America because we're very regionalist. But there's a whole list at vgcharts.com. I encourage you to go and check that out. North American developers are 2K Games, Four Corner Games. I'm not going to read them all because a lot of them are smaller developers. Devolver Digital is working on some games. Cloudhead, Drool, Electronic Arts is working on some PlayStation VR stuff. Finish Line Games, Farsight Studios, Firehose Games. Firehose, if they're going to do like a fireman kind of thing, that would actually be kind of fun. Flipfly, Frame Interactive has got some stuff going on. Gamecoder Studios, Happy Dance Studios, which could be interesting. Harmonix Music Systems is actually working on some stuff as well, which one of the big things recently was actually Harmonix kind of split from Mad Catz, which could have a big impact on the third-party peripheral industry. Cell phone going off. You're supposed to stop, people, because the political season is now over in Ohio. But Headless Chicken, you're looking at Imagination Studios, Intervision, Major League Baseball Advanced Media has something going on with PlayStation VR, Oddworld. What else? Pixel Rift, rather, has got some stuff going on there. Reload Studios. I don't see Rockstar, which is kind of a surprise to me, because Rockstar typically does some early stuff trying to get into new systems, I'm kind of surprised that they're not.
Also, Rockstar is really, really quiet about their stuff. They usually just kind of dump it on you at the last second. So I wouldn't be surprised, too, if maybe Rockstar... something is announced at E3. That would be a major way for Sony to make an impact on their conference this year.
Yeah, then actually that wouldn't surprise me. The only thing that it would surprise, like, the only reason it might surprise me is because Sony released the list.
Yeah.
But who knows? Warner Brother Interactive Entertainment also has some stuff going on. They actually have a lot of different properties, so that could be anything. You could be looking at anything from a Lord of the Rings title to a Mortal Kombat title to a Batman. They have a lot of properties at Warner Brothers, and that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Another one that I don't see on here, which is surprising to me, is Ubisoft. Ubisoft is really turning a corner, and they actually announced over the past week, they put out a statement along with the release of The Division, that they honestly believe that Tom Clancy's The Division is going to be a turning point for that company, and everybody will look, I believe the quote is something like, everybody will look at Ubisoft and split it as before The Division and after The Division.
Oh boy.
And from what I've read, The Division is a fantastic game.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody that plays it seems to love it. I haven't checked it out myself, so I can't comment on that firsthand. But, yeah, I got some friends on Twitter that's all they're playing right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's just but those are the main heavy hitters for the North American market.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I am 100% positive that some of those developers will just shock and amaze people.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't meant as a disrespect if I didn't read off one of those companies.
Yeah.
Ubisoft is, however, working in the European market. So that's one thing to keep an eye on, because they are doing something with VR.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of where is it going to be released. So it's a huge list. And like I said, 230 people. Again, William D'Angelo of VGCharts.com actually released that here this afternoon. Literally, well, actually it was listed as posted 2 hours ago, but who knows when you're listening to this, so
yeah.
It doesn't really matter. But yeah, a lot of publishers and developers are working on Sony VR, including Capcom, Square Enix, Crytek.
Yeah, Crytek is doing Robinson the Journey. And, I mean, of all the titles that I've seen for PlayStation VR, that is the one that has me the most excited. Do you know anything about that game, Brian?
No.
Okay, I'm just going to read the description to you really quick, and tell me what you think of this. In okay. Robinson the Journey, you assume the role of a young boy who has crash-landed on a mysterious planet and must become a pioneer of sorts as you explore your surroundings, interact with the world around you, and discover amazing secrets at every turn. To me, that sounds like Lost in Space, like the TV show Lost in Space.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm hooked right there.
It does, but also in one way, you could almost consider it maybe like a Fallout experience,
yeah.
Depending on how they flesh out the story.
Yeah.
Because if you think back to like a Fallout 3, where you end up entering this vast wasteland, mm-hmm. the Capital Wasteland. We don't really know what's going on because you've lived your entire life in a sheltered environment, quite literally.
Yeah.
And you're forced out into that thing, and you've got a lot of discovery. I don't know. It could go any way.
Yeah. Yeah, the screenshots I have up here that I'm looking at, I see a T-Rex in one. I see some pterodactyls. Mm-hmm. So it almost has like a primitive vibe, maybe like a Fallout.
Sliders.
Oh, that's a great analogy. Yeah, Sliders was a great show. Maybe like Fallout meets Jurassic Park. I mean, think of how badass that could be. It just all depends on how well they can manage to execute the virtual reality part. I mean, if the entire game hinges around VR and everything else takes a backseat, by everything else, I mean gameplay, story, character development, that's going to be a problem for me. But if all the elements can come together and play nice, that could be a badass game.
Yeah, it should be really super interesting. And that's one of the great things about the whole VR thing. And I know people might call me out for being down on VR a lot as compared to AR. But the thing is, I don't view it as hypocrisy, because some of the things that they are announcing are really, they are exciting to a degree to me, even though I'm not really big on the VR experience and don't think that I'll necessarily partake until it's cheap enough for me to do so.
Yeah.
What fascinates me is the number of directions they can take. Because there's a lot of different things that can happen. They could succeed and treat the VR the right way. But we're going to see a lot of things right off the bat where they're going to be trying to balance the different aspects of the VR gaming experience. Balancing the stories versus the tech and playing with the tech. And it's one of the things I could not stand about Avatar the movie.
Sucked.
Yes, the 3D was just simply amazing. It was something we'd never seen. The story sucked, yeah. And I don't care what you say about the story. Nobody went to Avatar to see the story.
It was a 4.5-hour 3D demo, and it was just so painful, the last 2 hours of it.
Yeah, it really was.
It just went on and on. Okay, now they blew up the tree. Oh, well, it's not done yet. We're going to keep having stories.
Yeah, and the one thing that honestly might just sell me on to PlayStation VR is the next story. Again, just sticking with VG charts because they pretty much have all the information, bam, bam, bam. It was literally VG charts, which is hammering them out this afternoon. William D'Angelo, good job, by the way. I don't know how much they're paying you, but you earned it today. Sony has revealed that all PlayStation 4 games will be playable on PlayStation VR with the cinematic mode. It basically simulates a 225-inch TV screen at a distance of 2.5 meters.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that alone, I'm like, you know, even if I never play a VR game, I would really be tempted to try that.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, if you can play anything, imagine a game like you said, Dead Space, with that size of screen, just playing that thing.
I can't even imagine. Yeah, that right there might have sold me on it. I mean, if I can play fantastic titles like The Last of Us, Grand Theft Auto 5, that type of stuff in that cinematic mode, I mean, that opens up my entire library to having a new experience with an old game that I know is good going in.
Yeah. And it almost nullifies the list that they released of the developers. That 230 developer list, yes, maybe you're talking specifically about the VR-capable games. Mm-hmm. But at this point, you can pretty much take anybody who's developing anything for Sony and just say suddenly that, I mean, you're developing something that's going to be basically a seamless resolution, like going from a 55-inch TV to a 225-inch TV. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, yeah, 225-inch TV, that's 5 meters in width, which is what they calculated.
Wow.
I mean, you're talking 5 meters, that's basically almost, in American terms, going to the standard measurement system, it would be basically 14 feet. I mean, a 14-foot wide TV, and you're going to have it in front of your face.
Wow.
I mean, that's just incredible. Apparently, that was a press release that was released at GameSpot.com, which was reported through VGCharts.com. Just fantastic. It says users will also be able to enjoy 360-degree photos and videos that are captured by devices such as an omnidirectional camera on PS4 via the PS4 media player, which will let them feel as if they're physically inside a captured scene. So that's also going to be in there as well. The more I read about, I hate to say that $400, I want to save up and get one of these.
Yeah, I can see just over the span of, we've been talking for what, about an hour, that you're starting to get drunk on the Kool-Aid, and I love it because that means I'm not going to be potentially the only chump that buys it at launch. Because I see you kind of, you're joining me in the virtual line of Amazon.com, waiting for you to purchase, to check out with your new VR headset.
Yeah, in all honesty, and unfortunately,
yeah,
that's the other news that broke, is the fact that they're already sold out of their allotment on Amazon.com.
I didn't know that. That sucks.
So, and who knows? It is an initial allotment, so they might release more.
I hope so.
And I will report that at 1UP.club. or this very podcast after I purchase mine, maybe. Even if I just reserve it and change my mind after I gauge how much my wife yells at me.
I just looked it up. Currently unavailable. Price is Right loser horn there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. If I need any questions at all whatsoever about the price, I can always refer my wife to Oculus. Because the Oculus VR founder, Palmer Luckey, has actually called the $400 price tag that will be attached to VR. According to GameSpot.com, he called that, quote, right around what was expected. So they're basically saying it's a fair price. They are saying, obviously, they're going to promote their own gear. But speaking to GameSpot, in an interview at the Game Developers Conference, Luckey said, quote, I know how much this technology costs. We're building a headset. We're trying to sell it as affordably as possible. We have some higher quality stuff, our manufactured stuff, and we have some really nice soft goods and fabric going on in ours. We also have multiple LED displays instead of just one display, but the Oculus Rift at $599 is actually not that far off. We're selling $599 with a controller, with the remote, and with a couple of games, if someone doesn't own them already. Sony is selling a camera, a controller, and you've got the headset. We're actually fairly similar in cost. They are cheaper, but I think it's a totally fair price, and they've definitely done a good job of keeping the cost down. Clearly, that was a priority. So,
can't argue with any of that.
Yeah, they are giving them a nod, and I tend to agree with them. I mean, if it ends up a hard plastic thing that's not all that comfortable, then that will be kind of a turnoff. But they do. I mean, the Oculus Rift and the Valve Vive are actually coming with a much more complicated and structured system. I would assume that those two systems will also be more powerful than the PlayStation VR, given that they'll run on a completely different operating system running through a PC. But definitely, I mean, at least one of the things that's nice about this is that because it's a new technology, we're not going to see all that uber competitive nature coming out, where if it was Microsoft coming up with one and Sony coming up with one, the fanboy war that would result from that before the thing even came out would be just unbearable.
Yeah.
But because it's Oculus and Valve and Sony and a couple of other minor ones, HTC, yeah. I think is involved with the Oculus one. We're not seeing that vitriolic treatment of the different companies that are coming out with these, and I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, it's nice to get a break from that, because that gets old.
But who knows? One thing that gamers, moving on from VR, one thing that gamers can indulge their tribalistic BS treatment of different companies, Microsoft this week announced their cross-platform play with non-Microsoft platforms. Essentially, this is what we kind of been hinting towards ever since they announced Windows 10 and some of the features that would be there. Microsoft has announced cross-network play. This includes supporting cross-platform play between games on the Xbox One and Windows, as well as other platforms, which is not what I expected. This means that Xbox Live users on the Xbox One and Windows 10 will be able to play with gamers on other consoles and PC networks. It's up to game developers to support this feature, and Xbox Live players will always have the option of choosing to play only with the other Xbox Live players, said Director of ID at Xbox, Chris Charla. He continued, we're thrilled to confirm that Psyonix Rocket League will be one of the first games to take full advantage of this new capability by enabling cross-network play between Xbox One and PC players with an open invitation for other networks to participate as well. Clearly, they're talking to PlayStation Network.
Yeah.
This, and before I get to Sony's response, this is actually the shot across the bow that I was completely surprised that they would actually go so far as to call out Sony to join them in this endeavor. What are your thoughts? Because I know that we talked a little bit about this right as soon as it happened.
Yeah, you know, we're right in the throes of the political season here in the United States. Doesn't this seem like something one political opponent would do to the other? You know, just throw this question out there and say, how are you going to respond to this? And I think that's what it is. It's all just a power play. But I am very interested to see how this all plays out because, I mean, this opens so many doors. And choosing to go with such an uber-popular game like Rocket League, I mean, everybody loves Rocket League. What a great move to make that your introductory game. To drum up popularity in this. Not that it needed that, because everybody wants to play games with their friends, no matter what kind of system they're using, whether it's PC, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo DS. Make all that stuff capable or compatible.
Yeah. I completely agree, because this is the one thing that I really did. And we talked about this the last episode of Heads Up. We talked about the compatibility between PlayStation, or between Xbox and Windows 10, and we had actually talked about what would be different about this world if they would have done this on the original Xbox with Windows NT or XP or whatever 2000 that would have been back then, and it would have vastly changed the landscape of video gaming today, and this has the potential to do just that. Now, my prediction was right off the bat that a lot of the Sony people would look at this as a sign of weakness coming from Microsoft to say that Microsoft is going out there and basically they're admitting that they need Sony to join in on this thing. I kind of looked at this, and by the way, when this happened, I actually woke up to a Facebook message from Ryan Noble. So shout out to him for calling my attention to this as soon as I woke up on I believe Monday is when all this broke. But my very first thought was, this is such a shrewd move by Microsoft. I mean, because we knew they were going to have the cross-platform with the PC and Xbox One. That was inevitable. But to then call out Sony, that was not a sign of weakness. That was a very shrewd move. That was a very, hey, gamers, we are all about you kind of move. That was, I mean, if you're out there, and it was a very Goodwill Hunting type move, if you remember the scene from the bar where they just basically called them out. And I just think that is absolutely fantastic, because in the end, gamers win. And that's what it's all about, because now Microsoft, no matter what Sony does, Microsoft can say, hey, we're the one who reached out. We're the one who are making this happen. And you're a little bit behind the ball. Which, incidentally, the next story was a little bit about that. Because Sony, in response, was asked directly about Microsoft's invitation to cross-platform play by GameSpot.com. And Sony responded in kind of a predictable way, I guess you would say.
Very PR heavy.
Very PR heavy. That's a good way to put it. They said PlayStation has been supporting cross-platform play between PC on several software titles, starting with Final Fantasy XI on PS2 and PC back in 2002. We would be happy to have the conversation with any publishers or developers who are interested in cross-platform play. The people that they don't want to have a conversation with, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. is specifically Microsoft.
Yeah.
they're willing to talk to the publishers and developers, so they're leaving it up to them. Now, the thing that I don't like about Sony's response, it is kind of predictable, as I said, but Microsoft took the initiative. They went to the publishers and the developers and said, this is something we want to do. Can you make this happen? Please make this happen. And Sony, just judging by their response, they're taking a very passive approach to this, and I'm not sure if that's smart or not. I think in a lot of sects, they're going to end up with people aren't going to care. Some of the fanboys won't care.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, You look at something like Call of Duty Black Ops 3. The number of people that will cross over and play people on Xbox or the PSN networks, it's going to be staggering. Just the sheer number of people. They're going to crash servers doing this if it happens.
Yeah, and that might be one of the things that prevents it from ultimately happening, is technical restrictions like that. If they can't figure out a way to make this all stable and make that all play nice together, it's a great dream to have, but mm-hmm. There's some really big hurdles that they are going to have to jump over, whether it's between the two companies, not necessarily the greatest history between them as far as getting along and whatnot, but you've also got a lot of technical stuff that's going to have to be ironed out. So, I mean, I think best case scenario, this is 2 to 3 years away if they can make it happen.
Yeah. And there are some other issues, too. I mean, it's just like the VR. They're going to have things that they have to work out with it. But when you look at it, I kind of have a feeling that the real beneficiaries for this playing nice together between the two companies, if it happens, is going to be the independent developers. Because you look at the majority of the independent games, they don't have complicated control schemes. They don't have anything that's so major over the top that they really tax whichever system they are on. And so you end up with a game like Rocket League. They basically just use left and right trigger and the jump buttons, the A buttons, and they don't use a very complicated control scheme, and it'd be very easy to translate from one system to another.
Yeah.
One of the arguments that I saw, or one of the, not arguments, as a warning to our listeners, I often use arguments, in the intellectual term. So that's what, if I say argument, I don't mean fight. I mean, just, you know, discussion points. But one of the arguments about the things that have to happen with this is, many of the games that are on PCs, PCs will have a distinct advantage because of the sheer number of control schemes that they can use.
Oh, definitely.
There's a decided advantage to being able to use a keyboard and a mouse, or as you talked about with BioShock on your recent iRacing episode,
yeah.
Racing wheels,
yeah.
Just PCs can support a much wider range of controls,
yeah,
and controllers.
The number of peripherals available for a PC, I mean, it's just unbelievable. And they're not hard to hook up. I mean, you buy a Logitech G27, which we went on and on about in that podcast you just mentioned. You plug that thing in, and it just works. You don't have to – the days of downloading countless drivers and stuff like that for these gaming peripherals is over. You plug them in, and they just work. I mean, it's just a piece of cake, and PC is always going to have that edge over its console's brothers.
Yeah, and no matter how advanced a console gets, it'll never have the potential power of a PC.
No.
It just won't. They're not set up to have that kind of power. They're game-specific, whereas you can take a PC and you can beef that up. And anybody who's a hardcore gamer on a PC knows damn well all about beefing up their computer to make it as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, like, my laptop that I have now probably has a much higher processing speed than my PlayStation 4, because PlayStation 4 at this point, what, it came out 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And so my laptop is brand damn new. Technology in 3 years, it's you might as well just completely eliminate like 3 generations of of tech, because it just advances so quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's one of the things that they'll have to work on. Whether they end up, developers find a way to basically nerf the games, to dumb them down when it comes to specifically cross-platform play or what. And I'm sure that PC gamers will be the second most put off by something like that. Because I think that, yeah, even if you dominate in something like that, like you go from a PC and you're playing somebody on an Xbox or on a Sony, if you have that kind of advantage, that'll make the games get pretty old pretty quickly. Unless you're a dick who likes to humiliate people. But it'll be interesting to see how the developers do handle that, because it really is. It's an unfair advantage, and there's got to be some way of identifying what system each person is playing on and finding a way to find that balance. The other company that's probably kicking themselves in the teeth right now, because I left out in the cold again as it comes to this, I would imagine, is Nintendo. What is the effect of this cross-platform play going to have on Nintendo? Because they are so protective of their intellectual properties, their Marios, their Zeldas, their whatever, Splatoon at this point. There's not necessarily going to be a lot of play. I can't picture them giving up Mario for Sony PlayStation.
No. I don't see how Nintendo would benefit from this at all, because I mean, no matter how nice these companies end up playing, let's go puppy dogs and rainbows here for a second, and say Microsoft, Sony, the PC companies all find a way to get along. This is all good and stuff like that. I still don't think you're ever going to see a Halo game on Sony. You're going to see Uncharted on Microsoft. I mean, the Call of Duties and stuff like that that are already cross-platform will be available. But it's never going to go that far. I mean, do you think?
No, I cannot picture it. Yeah, I really can't.
Sony's never going to let... The Last of Us 2 is never going to appear on PC or Xbox. It's just not going to happen. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's all Nintendo really has right now is their homegrown stuff. So if that's not available on the other Microsoft, Xbox, and Sony, I mean, how does Nintendo benefit from this? They just don't.
Yeah. They, I feel bad for Nintendo almost, because the thing is, they've got this NX coming out. In the meantime, you got Microsoft and Sony, they're already playing with VR. And I know everybody's going to be like, Microsoft doesn't have a VR. But they've partnered with Oculus, so they've got a hand in Oculus. They've got their finger on the pulse of what's going on.
And they've also got HoloLens coming out.
Yeah, the HoloLens at some point, which once they get the tech ready for it, which is a little bit out, and they got their finger on the pulse. They know exactly what's going on. And in the meantime, Nintendo is trying to catch up with this NX system. And honestly, until all these stories developed about this VR, and not only the VR, but also the cross-platform play, honestly, my most anticipated thing to watch for at E3 was actually the NX.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, the NX is getting pushed to the side again.
Yeah. Yeah, Nintendo couldn't have timed this any worse. Not that they intentionally did this by any means, but, you know, instead of, hindsight's 2020, but instead of releasing the Wii U, really, that was the time that they needed to do this next console. That could really end up just biting them in the ass, because now VR is the big tech story of 2016. I mean, the buzz around VR in the last week is just off the charts. Nobody is talking about Nintendo's next console right now. It's really going to be hard for Nintendo to come in and wow everybody at E3. Almost to the point where they need to give us, they need to call a conference or something like that and before E3 and announce the NX, whatever it's going to be called. Because, I mean, they have no buzz right now going in. They literally have no chance.
Yeah. And the thing is, when they had the buzz, it was because there was really nothing else going on in the news cycle.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I hate to say it, but I almost see Nintendo is eventually going the way of, the VTech, which, if you're not familiar, kids have a very basic video game system that has things like Leapfrog programs and stuff like that to help them learn. It's a little plug-and-play basic video game system, cartridge-based, for kids. It's VTech. They have, like, a V-Smiles game or something like that. And I honestly see Nintendo is eventually just slipping into that and falling so far behind that they can't do anything. And I guess one analyst said about Nintendo is that they're operating on a really, really old business model, and they're not forward-thinking enough.
Yeah.
And what they are forward-thinking on is not tempered with realism. Things like the Wii U and that second screen controller seem like a great idea.
Yeah.
Until you realize that making a second screen controller is basically mandatory in most games, is not what people were looking for. Yes, it's technologically advanced, but it's just too gimmicky and it's not something that people really get into. And if you want evidence of that, Bethesda's guilty of the same thing, coming up with the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy app. Nobody uses that thing in gameplay because it's too much of a distraction.
Yep, I used it for maybe 2 hours and I'm like, why do I need this? It's 1,000 times more work to sit and monitor and go to my screen to handle this when I can just hit the circle button and call it up.
Yeah, and when you do use it, then it's not pausing the game.
Yep.
I mean, so unless you're a hardcore gamer and you want to beat it, doing the absolute hardest way, which nobody actually appreciates anyway. Yeah,
the game's hard enough as is.
Yeah, it's like there's no point. And unfortunately, I mean, all this great stuff going on between Sony and Microsoft just further pushes, and they're facepalming Nintendo out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Is essentially what's happening as these two go at it.
Yeah, you make a great comparison there with the Leapfrog stuff. I could see it either going that route or, you know, maybe Nintendo eventually just has to raise the white flag on the hardware sales and they'll just license off the Mario, Metroid, and those kind of franchises. Zelda, can you imagine the bidding war that there would be for the exclusive rights to have Nintendo's properties on your platform?
It would be ridiculous, even a timed exclusive.
God, it would be fun to watch that. It would just be great.
It really would be.
On a Sony platform, I mean, that seems like a match made in heaven right there. Oh, God, the back catalog, greatest hits collections, trophies. Oh, man, we got to stop talking about it.
Yeah, we'll just get too excited and be massively disappointed.
I can feel my heart racing here just thinking about that. that would be awesome.
Ganondorf VR.
Yep. There you go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be insane. And the thing is, I feel so bad because even like Nintendo, if you look at one of the games that they're talking about with this whole cross thing with Rocket League, Nintendo doesn't have Rocket League. And that seems like the most Nintendo third-party, like, compatible kind of game ever.
Yeah. Just think if Nintendo had found a way to make Rocket League a Wii U exclusive. I mean, wouldn't it have been... I mean, obviously no one, including both of us, I think, knew what a hit Rocket League was going to be. But, I mean, it would have been worth $10 million to have the exclusive rights for that on the Wii U. I mean, how many consoles would that have moved?
That's the problem, though, is that I don't think it would have moved very many, because as we talked about last week's show, I can easily rattle off a dozen different titles that I would love to have.
Yeah.
And a 1999 Rocket League, I don't think would push me over the edge, like, because there's already just so many different titles for the Wii U that I would love to play.
Yeah.
But I still can't justify that $250 price tag on the Wii U console itself because I'm just not that excited about it. And I think it becomes a speculation thing because you end up speculating how long is this system going to be around. And Nintendo never gave me cause to believe that the Wii U was the next thing that I needed to have, unlike the Wii. The original Wii, everybody had that thing. Everybody had a blast with it. It was the most simple little game system. It was just the most gimmicky game system.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of fun games to play. The nunchuck controllers were just fantastic. It was so fun. But the Wii U kind of took what worked with the Wii and tried to morph it into something that just didn't work.
Yeah.
At least initially. And from what I understand, everybody I've talked to that actually has a Wii U and plays it for any kind of reason, whether it's playing Splatoon or whether it's playing Mario Maker, they love the games that are on it, and they're great games. But there's so few games, and there's no confidence at all that you're going to be able to find things. And if you'll recall, it was the lack of third-party development that basically killed the Wii U, because people were excited about it until they realized that there were only like 100 games after 2 or 3 years that came out for the Wii U.
Yeah.
There was literally no games for it. And I think that's honestly what just killed the possibility for the Wii U to be an option for me. So first impressions are a huge thing. Right. And if you can't provide third-party support for a system, that massively limits what the consumer market is going to do for that system.
Yeah, it was just, upon launch, it was just too confusing as to what exactly the Wii U was. I mean, nobody understood how it worked, what you were supposed to do with the tablet. I mean, is the tablet required? Is there a SKU that doesn't have the tablet? I mean, they just did such a poor job of explaining exactly how everything worked, and the needle just didn't move at all for me.
Yeah. It's very difficult, very difficult, and poor Nintendo. I want to say poor Nintendo, but in the end, they've done it to themselves as well. Yeah,
they're also worth like a gazillion dollars, so I'm not going to feel too sorry for them.
Yeah, in all honesty, I mean, they really are. They have enough intellectual property.
Yeah, nobody at Nintendo is living in a fridge box under a bridge. You know, they're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Well, either way, what we're going to do, we're going to call that a show. We kept it at a decent time frame, with about an hour and 20 minutes by the time we're fully done here. So that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Happy with that. But why don't you go ahead and give any plugs and shout-outs that you would like to give, and then I will wrap up the show.
You can follow me at Twitter at Ryhamner. That's all together. GameBlock is the website, game-block. Do not forget the hyphen, because I cannot guarantee where that's going to take you. I'm pretty sure it takes you to nowhere. But yeah, check out the site. Like I said, we talked a little bit earlier about the cabinet this week is Super Mario Brothers 2. There's some links to some YouTube videos I made up there. And there's also a surprise in there as I played the Lost Levels as well, which is the Japanese
nice.
Version of Super Mario Brothers 2, which is quite a bit different, as you'll find out if you go over there and check out the video. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's really, really hard, though.
I actually need to pick that up, and I've been looking to pick it up.
Yeah.
It's a matter of finding it, because some of the games are a little bit harder to find outside of eBay.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly, I enjoy going to the retro game stores, and I think I've talked about it before, you support the brick and mortar anytime you can.
Of course.
Because, you know, local guys are great, and you want those guys to stay in business because you do have access to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Lost Levels is something that I really actually want to play. I want to try it. I actually want to go back and try playing Super Mario Bros. 2 as well, because in all honesty, I just never really gave it a chance. And I have the 25th anniversary edition for the Wii here. I just haven't gone back and tried to play it. I definitely have to do that, because it's a great thing from the past, and I'm glad that you did it with GameBlock.com, and I'm certainly glad that you played the Lost Level. I'm going to check that out, because
yeah.
Right now I don't have it, and I'm looking forward to it.
You get a lot of bang for your buck. Like I said earlier, I don't have the original Nintendo version of Super Mario Bros. 2, so I had to play the upscaled Super Mario All-Stars version. And that's got both of those games on there, and they look fantastic. But that game, Super Mario All-Stars for the Super Nintendo, has so much bang for your buck. I think you can get it on Amazon for like $40 right now, which sounds like a lot of money for a Super Nintendo game. but you're getting the original Super Mario Brothers, SMB2, the third game, Super Mario World, which was the first Mario game on the Super Nintendo. Plus, you get the lost levels thrown in there. I mean, it's unbelievably difficult, but if you just want to experience what it's like to play the Japanese version of Super Mario Brothers 2, it's on there, you can play it, and you won't feel ripped off because you did not pay a full price for that. You got the other four games as well, so it's a great deal.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's great about the world that we live in, is we have access to these things. Because I will be picking up Super Mario All-Stars at my first opportunity.
Yeah.
Simply because I do want to play all those games. And you know damn well, anybody who's gamed back in those days, whether it's for nostalgia reasons or simply because Super Mario Brothers 3, I would argue is one of the best games of all time.
Definitely.
Even today, I would stack it up against nearly any game that's done today, and you'll have just as much fun playing it, no matter how good you are at it. If you play that game with somebody else, it's the ultimate two-player experience with a Mario Brothers game.
Yep. And great games to play with your kids, too. You know, like I say, I've got a seven-year-old. She absolutely loves playing that game, you know. And there's so much, you know, if she gets tired of the game mechanics in Super Mario Brothers 3, she can go play Super Mario World. I mean, she can entertain herself for hours playing those games, and it's great, and I can experience them with her.
Yeah, it is. And it's accessible, too. Because the thing, like, people look at accessible as a bad thing. I would argue that accessible is a great thing in certain circumstances, and in most circumstances. And like, people kind of, myself included, kind of poop on Star Wars for being accessible. The Battlefront game. But to me, they dumbed it down just a little bit too much in just the inclusion, or the non-inclusion, rather, of a campaign mode.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is Star Wars Battlefront is what it was supposed to be. So even though we might have complaints about it, they're still adding decent content to it.
Yeah.
With Outer Rim coming out, and we're going to have a Death Star level and things like that, which I really hope they add a space battle to that.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll find out, because they haven't released a lot of details on it. Just the fact that they added new Neeb as a hero.
There you go.
In the Outer Rim, and they also added Greedo as a hero, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I like that. Both good choices.
Yeah, really good choices, and I'm hoping that they keep that up. Because there's a lot, like Bespin, are we going to have Lando Calrissian as a hero there, or Lobot?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe some of the more basically underappreciated members of the Star Wars universe, I guess.
They got to start dialing this stuff back a little bit, though, or they are going to run out of heroes to, fresh heroes to debut in the inevitable Battlefront that's going to come out this fall.
Yeah. I kind of worry about that, and I kind of don't, because they're already working on the next Star Wars game. So I think that the next Star Wars games could end up being taking advantage of either new characters or end up introducing things like Cal Katarn.
Yeah.
If they go with the Star Wars 1313, then who knows? It could be all new characters, and I'd be totally fine with that.
Rumor is 1313 isn't dead.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, that's
I mean,
it depends on what they do, because EA is in charge of it now, and EA is evil.
Yeah, I mean, that was that just to know that they haven't thrown out, like, the assets or anything like that, I mean, that does give me some hope. I mean, because I want to see that game. I want that game to come out, and I want it to be just badass.
Yeah, or the Darth Maul game.
Yeah. Oh, God, that Darth Maul game. What a tragedy that never happened.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're dealing with a bunch of great games, whether they're retro or whether they're whatever. And accessibility is just not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that Super Mario Bros. 3 is, it's accessible.
For sure.
So, by all means, I mean, check those things out. If you have an older system, great. Go out and get these things again and revisit them, because they're fantastic. And if you don't have an older system, then it's not hard to find a retro store in your area. Go online and get one of those retro systems. For literally, you can get like a Super Nintendo for $50-$60 depending on where you go.
Yep.
It's not that huge of an investment. If you can't find that, go out, buy a Retron 3 or a Retron 5 that will not only allow you to play these old systems, but also convert them into HD or composite video.
Mm-hmm.
And make them compatible with today's televisions. I mean, I cannot tell you how fun it is to sit here with my son for an hour in the evening and play Super Off-Road for the SNES.
Oh, great.
To play Sonic and Knuckles from the Genesis.
Yeah.
It's just so much fun. And I think if you're a gamer, you owe it to yourself to really revisit some of those old things, because we get wrapped up in these huge 80 to 500-hour games.
Yeah.
And we forget just how fun it is to run through Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the Nintendo and 2 or 3 hours just to sit there and play it. So go out and do that, by all means. Go look at that stuff. But we are on the cusp of yet another video game revolution. And speaking of revolutions, which is what this show was really all about, I go to 1UP.club again, like with GameBlock. Don't forget the hyphen. 1UP.club is basically going through its own revolution as we transfer ToonShow.com over to the new website, which I'm actually currently trying to work on a way to transfer all the content from ToonShow.com to 1UP.club. It's still a work in progress. It's a really big work in progress, and I feel bad because I am trying to figure out all this coding by myself on my own. And trying to make all these different things happen. So it's kind of a slow process. I do apologize for that. But I do have a couple of things planned for 1UP.club that you're going to want to keep an eye out, because I recently bought a Sega Dreamcast off of Craigslist. And I was telling you, Ryan, it came from a smoker's home, which is just flat disgusting. But I've been working on cleaning that thing up and this whole cleanup process of this system and the controllers and the memory cards and things like that has inspired me to do something that I talked to some people about, that I talked to on a personal level. But I've got some information that I would like to share with everybody. And I'm going to compile that information on how to actually go about cleaning up systems, because nobody wants to smell smoke when they go to fire up a system.
The worst smell.
And have that in their basement.
The worst smell on the planet. I'd rather smell a dirty diaper.
Yeah, and it's not a thing against smokers. I get it. It's a habit. Disgusting habit. You have that. Some people chew their toenails. Some people, pick their noses, whatever. I'm not coming down on smokers because, to each their own. It's your money. Spend it how you want. Your health, spend it how you want. But, yeah, it's just such a disgusting smell when you're not a smoker and you go and you get a system from a smoking house.
Yeah.
But I'm putting together a list of cleaning tips and things that you absolutely must have, not only if you're getting a system from a smoker, because it's not exclusively about that. The fact of the matter is a lot of people tend to ignore the whole maintenance of your systems, of your controllers, of things like that. And you really need to know what to do and how to take care of your stuff. So I'm trying to compile a few tips, a few lists of how to things to keep around the house to make the maintenance of your stuff easier and make, if it's easier, then it's you're more likely to do it. I don't know how many controllers you've burned through in the past.
A lot.
I've gone through so many, and just little things can actually extend the life of your controllers, because I don't feel like spending $60 every year on a new controller.
It's like preventative maintenance in a car. You change the oil in your car, the engine lasts longer. Rotate the tires last longer. There's plenty of stuff. PlayStation 3s, it was very common to get the yellow light of death. Well, that was caused by the thermal paste coming away on the heatsink. And it was like an easy fix. The guy that fixed mine told me, if you go and redo the thermal paste like every 2 years or even every 1 year, if you want to be super careful, it's not going to happen. So that would have saved me like $300.
Yeah. I mean, literally, there are so many simple little things. Even from, I rip on smokers because of the plaque from the smoke that goes and gets into the controller or whatever. But sweaty palms do the same thing. And so nobody's immune to actually ending up with issues from residual stuff that just ends up in the controller. So I'm actually working on getting even modders. Modders know all about how to take the things apart, and it's not that difficult to actually mod a controller, which is always kind of funny when somebody's like, oh, I can't mod. I'm like, actually, you can mod. And like, it just takes a little bit of patience to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's one of the, I'm trying to compile a list of different tips and stuff like that. It might end up a series, depending on how much I'm able to get into one article, how long it actually takes me to break it down. So look forward to that at 1UP.club, as well as the transference of everything from TuneShow.com over to 1UP.club. In the meantime, you can find this podcast as well as Ryan Hamner's podcast, which I've actually renamed Block Party. Well, actually, the video game aspect is Block Party.
The Johnny Goodtimes Fun Factory that I do with Andy Woomer that records Friday nights, that's not going away. That's going to be our source for movies, TV. We're going to start talking Daredevil, which comes out in 2 days, and I'm super excited about that, and I know Andy is as well. So, I mean, like, pop culture stuff is still going to be found there. So don't worry if you like that show, the five people that like that show. It's not going away. You can still find it. It's going to be on the same channel, all the stuff. It's just, it's totally a branding thing.
Excellent. But you can find this show, Heads Up, and you can find Block Party. You can find the Johnny Goodtimes Fun Podcast, Fun Factory Podcast.
Yeah.
You can find all those at the 1UP Club Podcast Network on iTunes, RSS feed. Those are available at 1UP.club at the top of the page if you go on your PC. I'm not sure what's up with the mobile. Like, for some reason, it doesn't show up on the mobile. But you can always switch to a desktop view, and it's right there. Also, you will be able to find this specific podcast still on the Trending Topics Network, which can be found at trendingtopicsnetwork.com. You will be able to find all kinds of shows over there as well, whether you're looking old school at the movies, where they look at all the movie news that's coming out for every single movie. I understand they really, really like 50 Shades of Grey. Actually, they hated it. It was kind of funny, that episode. You can find just about every wrestling podcast that's ever been on the internet. You can find over Trending Topics Network, so be sure to check that out as well. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at ToonsBrian. Get a hold of me any way, shape, or form that you can, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on email. Feel free to do that. I am interested in hearing all your thoughts on all the latest news, including, actually, I had gotten something from Mart, which I'm trying to open now. Yeah, I feel bad. I don't want to say, I'm interested in what you have to say and then ignore it. Because I've been playing Witcher 3 and I've been having a lot of conversations with him about that.
Yeah.
And of course I can't find the message that he sent. Of course I can't. Why would I? He had something to say about the, here it is. I'm looking for the wrong email address. He's talking about EA. We'll just do this really quickly. I'd never bought a full game digitally before I purchased Battlefront. Following the 05 update, I now know why. Every time I tried to update it, there was an error message, which, as you very well know, not having the latest update restricts you to offline play only. And with Battlefront, the game is shit without that.
Sure.
EA did respond to my tweets, firstly recommending that I restore my purchases and restart the machine. That didn't work. He was not surprised. EA then prompted me to log in an issue with their advisors, and he has not received a response as of the time of this email.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So he said in the end he had to delete the game, restore all of his purchases, then reinstall it again. Finally finished around 1 a.m., by which time it was far too late for him to actually play.
Nice.
This was his own fix, so digital-only guys, beware.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I don't like about digital. It's also, it falls into place with one of the things Jimmy actually said, Old School Heel. He actually had brought that up about the fact that when people buy games and they buy them digitally, congratulations, you're stuck with it. like we were talking about earlier in the show, when you bought the games back in the 80s, it was your game, period, end of story. And digital has kind of actually gone to that because there is no transferring of digital files anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something to be aware of. And I think it's one of the big reasons why physical copies, I think, will always be around.
I hope so. I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not against digital or anything like that. I mean, the digital purchases I've made on the PlayStation 4 have been fantastic. You know, everything works fine. But God help you if anything goes wrong because you hear horror story after horror story about this guy with his Battlefront problem, and it sucks.
Yeah. It's really bad. And thank you for the email, Mart, and I definitely agree, because the digital things, I've done it a lot more than I ever thought I would, including several of the games that I still haven't played yet. I've played so little of Metal Gear Solid 5, which actually a physical copy.
Good game.
Digitally, I bought Lara Croft Definitive Edition, Tomb Raider Definitive Edition. I haven't played that at all. I bought The Witcher 3, which I played about an hour of. Good game so far, what I've seen of it. Although I hate horses. In games, the horses mechanics just don't seem to work for me.
Don't bother with Red Dead Redemption then.
Yeah. And I also played a little bit of Just Cause 3, which I bought digitally. And just a lot of the games that I've bought have been digital lately. Physical copies, I think I only have 5 or 6 games upstairs, and 4 of them are my son's, which is really weird.
Yeah.
And I never imagined myself being that type of gamer. I've been vehemently against digital copies, and yet the majority of my game purchases now end up digital, and I feel kind of dirty admitting
that. You got to change with the times. I don't like it either, but I love being able to look over at my shelf and see all my Metal Gears from the original GameCube, the Twin Snakes, all the way up to Phantom Pain. I love seeing them stacked in like a little row like that. I know that's crazy, but it's just something about being able to pick them up and look at them and check out the art book and remember when I found it in the store for the first time. You know, you just don't get that feeling, that nostalgia, with the digital copies.
Yes, absolutely. But either way, weigh in on that and all the topics that we discussed today, plus any of the topics that you might come up with on your own. We are interested. You can get a hold of us, oneup.club, gameblock.com. Don't forget the hyphens on both of those. Or trendingtopicsnetwork.com. Or you can find every podcast that you've actually listened to today. This has been a show. Thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.